Driving it home with Patty Vasquez, Patty Vasquez.
From global conflicts to greenhouse gases, the folks refusing to wear masks says, and politicians getting caught grabbing ass says, she's driving it home with Patty Vasquez.
Okay, that moment of silence means that Patty's back in studio and forgetting to push the right button, so all is right in the world for at least a day in my world. I am in studio and super happy to be seeing everybody. Lady B, good to see your lovely face. And I saw Matt Cummings, and he was like, what? What are you doing here? And in studio with me, I have Tom Carmack and Jerry Walsky joining us on the air in studio.
Yay!
And I'm so happy to be here.
Look at that.
I broke out of the hospital because I wanted to come in. One, I wanted to make sure that my key still worked, because I don't know. At some point, they're like, if she's going to be broadcasting from her son's hospital, let's look at our options here. And also wanted to take care of some more. We want to update some of our announcements about Minocqua Brewery and our sponsor of the show. So we're going to be doing that and letting you know, because Jerry, of course, Jerry Walsky is the beer Sherpa for Minocqua Brewery.
That's what they're calling me these days.
Yes.
It's not a bad gig.
Not a bad gig at all. And, you know, Tom, you are a beer connoisseur. I don't even know if you've had a chance to try some of the Minocqua.
I did. Yes. I did. Last time he was in town, he brought some.
Yes.
It's good.
It's good stuff. And now he's coming out with a Kolsch that is a choice beer.
I'm looking forward to the Kolsch.
Which is also going to be benefiting Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin and Personal Pack of Illinois.
Excellent.
So we're very excited about that. Which reminds me, by the way, of how I have not had a chance to celebrate with you guys about Kansas.
Oh, outstanding.
What, Tom? You look a little pessimistic.
The best I can do is cautiously optimistic.
Okay, cautiously. I know Tom. Jerry's like,
look at how many people showed up and came up.
We need the realists.
Yes,
we need the realists like Tom to go look.
I know. I'm with you. Keep the pedal to the metal.
Yes,
exactly right. I'm with
you.
We
will find a way to sabotage ourselves if we don't. all you have to go no further than the self-congratulatory hashtag activists on Twitter who literally do the least they can do every day to advance the cause, telling people who are actually out there doing things that they're not doing it right, and especially when it's people who call themselves progressives who direct that attention at people of color and women in a disproportionate way, telling them how they ought to be. Harkens back to the middle-aged white man who helpfully suggested to you how you could better talk about your experience as a sexual assault victim to make him more comfortable.
Yeah,
he thinks he's a progressive. Keep that in mind.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong. I know what Tom, where from Tom speaks, because we don't have to get into details, but to that point, because there is sort of a complacency, I think, in Illinois, since we have such strong protections when it comes to women's reproductive health and abortion and getting procedures done at our choice.
Our primary was only 20%.
That's a
red flag. That's scary.
Correct.
So Illinois, you know, come on.
Wake up.
Kansas was 40%?
No. It was 53% of registered voters showed up. And they had an uptick of 1,000% in people registering to vote, a majority of which were women.
Right.
So this is the work that Maggie O'Keefe does, our friend who's the committee woman for the 40th Ward. And this is what we need to be doing, is registering people and energizing them and getting them out to the polls. Because even though Illinois has a Democrat as a governor, this means there are rural areas of Kansas that showed up in droves. And many of them, for a single issue, fine. Right. Then you know what we need to do in those rural areas? Maybe it is guns. Maybe you appeal to the moms and you go after the people who, like, all guns at all costs, without limitations, which is what we ask for as women.
Wasn't there messaging out there in Kansas about the government not mandating and all? They kind of put it in terms that a lot of folks could understand. This isn't big government coming after me. I don't want them in my backyard. I want them in my personal life. So they use that mandate word in a positive way to get the point across. Because, boy, they put up blockades to mess that up. The way that was worded, I mean, my lord, those Republicans, they really made sure that you had to really think about it. Am I going yes or no? This is what I want to do. But the way it was worded, they wanted to trip people up.
That had to be a heavy lift, don't you think, Tom, for educating, not just getting people out to the polls?
Anything like that. You know, we saw with the fair tax here.
Yeah, there you go.
the wording of ballot initiatives means everything. And, you know, it's why California has so many problems, because you can literally get any initiative on any way, mm-hmm. any election, and they're worded so poorly sometimes they have the opposite impact. These things are also done so quickly that unintended consequences are missed constantly.
Yeah.
So it's a messy way to get things done. But in this case, you know, we'll take the occasional win when it does. Yeah. But those things are fraught and they're dangerous. I want to go back quickly. You mentioned our friend Maggie, who unfortunately announced today she's not running for alderman in the 40th ward.
Oh, interesting.
But I want to give her a shout out, because the reason she's doing it is exactly what you talked about. She's about the activism, about registering people to vote, about doing the important work. Mm-hmm. Like somebody else in this room who decided not to run for office this year, realizing that you can sometimes accomplish more as an activist in your community than, you know, running for office against entrenched incumbents who are going to do the same thing over and over again.
I will say, being with my son alone for many days, we're heading into, we stayed at Lurie's starting June 30th. Today is August 4th. Mm. So that's how long I've been bedside with him, and many of those hours alone, left alone with my own thoughts and sort of going over a few things in my mind. And like, you know, the race that I ran was really because I am this mom. I will be by my son's side, as the way I had promised I would be by people's side in their darkest hours, in their darkest moments. It's why I ran. I didn't want people to feel alone, because I know what that feels like. And it made me angry that the reason that I ran was my commitment, my loyalty, my tirelessness to my family was what I wanted to bring to my community. And that was what people use against me. Still kind of bizarre to me. And in my mind, Tom, and you know that they're like, see, if she had run or if she had won, she'd have to go take care of her son. Like, that's how people's minds work. Mm-hmm. Instead of, like, I'm still doing all of my jobs just from the side of his bed.
Or they'd have just made your face darker on each subsequent piece of mail.
No doubt, yeah.
There you go,
that
too.
Yeah. I'm so happy to be back in the studio with you guys.
I have flashbacks to OJ and Time Magazine.
It was so weird. For folks who don't know, I ran for the 19th District House seat of Illinois, my neighborhood here on the Northwest side, and including some of the suburban areas like Harwood Heights and Norridge, and a little bit of Elmwood Park. And because it's a predominantly white area, the incumbent, Lindsay LaPointe, and she would say that it was other people that made her do it, but ultimately, if you're the boss of a campaign, you're the boss of a campaign. One called me a disgusting extremist, weaponized the trauma of rape survivors and domestic violence survivors, and on those mailers, made me progressively darker and darker. And people will call me, I guess, a bitter bitch about it, but it's called holding people accountable and demanding justice and having and really, that's what drives me, is justice. Mm-hmm. And, you know, getting away with something is not acceptable to me. Right. So that's one of the reasons why I will continue to hold her and Robert Martwick, her mentor, mm-hmm. who greenlit all of that.
And those were Democrats on Democrats.
And it's funny, because this is what Mike Carroll was talking about, Joan Esposito, a little bit about, like, how we approach each other as, and look, what's the name of the candidate that beat Zelensky?
I'm blanking right now.
And he didn't go negative. Mm-hmm. He was able to defeat an incumbent, which was the kind of race that we ran.
Right.
And the fact that the Democrats are willing to cannibalize good, strong mm-hmm. people who could be leaders in the party mm-hmm. is unconscionable. And this is what's appealing to me about the Democrats right now, knowing that their goal is to beat Ron Johnson, mm-hmm. right? All the Dems.
Wisconsin, they all got together.
Yeah, Mandela Barnes.
Same page. Yep, mm-hmm. that's what you need.
Right, that's what you have a conversation. If you mm-hmm. Before you go ahead and destroy somebody mm-hmm. and cause trauma, why don't you sit down and have a conversation first and say, look, you know, this is what we want to do.
It's not how you put together a team by, you know,
there's no money in it. Yeah. it's what all of this comes down to. There's no money in it. All of this, 80% of this ends mm-hmm. with public financing.
Yeah.
True.
It's the only reform that will actually have any impact financing.
You bring up an interesting point, because while I obviously, with a personal story about running for office, at the state level, this got very strange with Governor Pritzker mm-hmm. and his candidate for the head of the chair of DPI, which was Lisa Hernandez. And I got to tell you guys a story in a moment. But then Dick Durbin's person, which was Robin Kelly, and they kind of went at it and again, cannibalized each other in a way.
A family squabble.
And it's a flawed concept to begin with. it astounds me. You know, it was a little different when you had Madigan running everything, but the correct way to run a party, and we do it at the county level and the state level, and it's a complete mistake. An elected official should not also be the chair of the party. Mm-hmm. President Preckwinkle should not be the chair of the Democratic Party in Cook County, and that's not anything about her, and this isn't about Robin Kelly or Lisa Hernandez or anybody else. It's simply you create an immediate conflict between their elected office mm-hmm. and their appointed office, and the elected office is always going to get more attention. So when they're doing call time, they're raising money for themselves.
Right.
When they're doing what the party chair should be doing and party discipline and keeping people in line and making sure the candidates the party supports are supported, you're not going to do that to the extent you need to if you don't want to alienate people who are then going to maybe work against you for your elected office.
Exactly. Yeah.
Robin Kelly is a member of Congress. You know, the system, the money system in Congress is so absurd that you spend so much time on the phone every day raising money for your reelect from the day of your election. You cannot be the chair of a party also and
yes.
do the things you need to
totally.
Do. It needs
yeah.
to be somebody from the donor class who writes big checks, who has respect within the party, but is not beholden to an elective office. Mm-hmm. And until we do that in Illinois, the parties are always going to have very little discipline. You know, if you look at the slated candidates in the primary this year, I would say of the 80 committeemen in Cook County, a good 40 of them, and I'm probably being conservative, supported at least one candidate who is not a slated candidate of the party.
Really?
And if the party cannot discipline that behavior, you don't have a party anymore. And there's no benefit other than that being a committeeman anymore. You know, it's not the 70s. A committeeman doesn't control jobs. A committeeman doesn't have much influence. It's a non-paid position. So unless you're an activist like Maggie, who we talked about before, or my friend Sean Tenner, who does a lot of good works in Uptown in the 46th Ward to, you know, feed the homeless and get people involved and do some of the kind of work that Maggie does as well, unless you're doing that kind of work, being a committeeman's not much of a job anymore. So if there's no party discipline, there's no incentive for these people to actually support the party.
And that goes back to what we were talking about. Part of their job is to energize the base yep. and get people out. And they only got 20% of registered voters out for the primary.
That was a failure. Do other states have it separate?
When I worked, I did some campaigns in Kentucky and Nevada and California. And at the times I worked on those campaigns, the chair of the state party was always a non-elected official.
There you go.
And that person's job was to do call time just for the party.
Yeah, you're a cheerleader for the party.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And what happens then is if the chair of the party is not raising money and the individual committee people are raising money, then you have a bottom-down structure mm-hmm. where the power and the money comes from the bottom. So there's no incentive for them to do something to be cohesive for the party, mm-hmm. where if the party chair is, you know, if I'm the party chair and I raise $1 million into the party, then I exact some influence over the guy who's raised $50,000 in his organization.
Yeah.
If I've raised $50,000 for the state party and this guy here has raised $50,000 for his organization, I don't have any influence over him anymore.
Power. It's all about power.
It's all about power. Let's take a break here, and we are going to take your calls. By the way, I probably should let people know I was going to be on our Facebook live stream. So we're live streaming. I'm back. I can't move this arm because I hurt my shoulder weeks ago. But I'm just going to do a woo-woo. And you can see our lovely signs from Monaco Brewing. It's my choice and our In This House We Believe sign. So thank you so much to Kirk Banks and, of course, Jerry Walsky for providing those. Let's take a break here and continue our conversation. In studio, we have political strategist Tom Carmick and also political strategist and beer Sherpa and collaborator on Driving It Home, Patty Vasquez. Jerry Walsky joins us. And, of course, we're thrilled to have you. Dave will take a call right out of the gate when we come back. Everyone else, call 773-763-9278. And I think we're giving away, by the way, we have another Chula Vista to give away tomorrow. Not today, but I want to tease for tomorrow. So make sure you're tuning in today. Stay here and then come back tomorrow as well. I mean, I don't want to tell you what to do. It's just a suggestion. I would appreciate it. More in a moment on WCPT 820 Heartland Signal.
WCPT 820 is proud to introduce Heartland Signal, a multimedia newsroom of WCPT 820. Heartland Signal is dedicated to providing news coverage for the 2022 midterms in the Midwest region. At heartlandsignal.com, you can find all the day's news and views to keep you informed and up to date. If you love listening to WCPT 820, then you'll love getting your news from heartlandsignal.com. Visit us there today.
Chicago's Progressive Talk, WCPT 820, where facts matter.
Hi, this is Kirk Bankstead from the Minocqua Brewing Company, and I sell Choice Hard Seltzer, an all-natural grapefruit-flavored booze that you can enjoy for only 100 calories a can. Percentage of the proceeds of every can of Choice Hard Seltzer you buy goes to reproductive rights organizations in the Chicagoland area. Enjoy a light, refreshing hard seltzer this summer and support reproductive freedom at the same time.
Buy yours at Beer on the Wall, Arlington Heights, Woodman's in Bloomingdale, Kenwood Liquors in Homer Glen, and more to come. Must be 21. Please drink responsibly.
Hi, everybody. I could have played some music instead. I was just talking about my voice. It's weird to hear myself on a promo.
That's so
weird.
Because you never talk about yourself, so it's strange.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, let me tell you more about me.
I've got a goiter. And
I am so tired. I don't wake up well in general. Like, there's a lot of cussing on a typical morning when I wake up.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. So, I'm up just like...
I know. You've told me. Yeah, you got walking and running and all kinds of stuff. Up, and yeah, I'm like... Yeah. I'm like, again?
Yeah. Well, I grew up in a family business. We went to dry cleaners, and every morning you're waiting for somebody to call you to tell you the boiler didn't come on or something like that. So I was like up and running from the get-go.
So I sleep on an air mattress on the floor next to Declan's bed. And for the most part, the nurses that come in to check his vitals and check his whether or not he's soiled himself or needs to be changed and things like that, it's gone, I would say 85% of the time, it's gone smoothly. He needs to take meds with some of his milk, but he has rice milk or oat milk, and apparently there's a floating crew, and I just found that out today, that this is why sometimes I get shaken awake at about 5:36 in the morning. And the first time it happened, so like imagine lying on the floor and someone's like super close above you, it's terrifying. And so the first time nobody got hurt, and then and then the second time there were some expletives, like,
wow.
I mean, like, I just was, yeah, like, F, I just was like, and I had, no one's gotten hurt, but I mean, I swore on Saturday morning because I was just like, it was my chest, I felt like I was having a heart attack. So it turns out that the floating crew does not have the information, like, you know, just reach into the fridge and get them what you need to give the medications. But one woman came in one day. She's like, mama. And I was like, I thought it was one of my kids.
Oh, my Lord.
But with a girl's voice. And and I was like, what? Yeah. And they go, do you want me to take his vitals? That's the only time that's happened in 5 weeks. I'm like, what? Why are you? I mean,
do I look like a doctor?
I don't know what's happening. So wow. I am just, Tom, I don't need to tell you what it's like to have to be holed up at a hospital.
No, well, you and I were talking about that the other night. And from my month-long experience and what you've had now at Declan, you see, and, you know, I have a world of respect for doctors and nurses and all healthcare workers in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean there still aren't a few bad ones.
Well, they keep coming to my side. Like, I need, like, a do not cross tape, because, like, there's no reason to be on my side of the room. Like, mm-hmm. I have a little air mattress, and I've got sort of my office set up there, and there's nothing you can do on my side that you can't do on Declan's side of the bed. So, like one guy was coming in today, like, rolling in the vitals, like, all the machinery, and I'm like, hey, where are you going? Yeah. Why are you? Why are you all up in my grill?
Yeah.
What's going on over here? So I just need some boundaries. And I bought some bells for the back of the door. Because they knock and push at the same time. And I just need a little bit of space.
That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like having 100 different roommates. 100 roommates, but like a different 2 or 3 or 4 every single day. And again, like Tom said, extraordinary work that they do. I'm very grateful. I did see another mom chewing somebody out. Mm. And I was like, I just kept walking. Mm. I was like,
it's such a stressful situation.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Go and you have to understand it's stressful for them, but at some point they do get to leave. And, you know, the person who will always have a special place in my heart is the nurse who came in and yelled at me for 10 minutes for hitting the call button when they were 6 hours late with the blood thinner when I had blood clots in my lung that they told me could be fatal. And I'm 6 hours late with the meds and I hit the call button and she came in and yelled at me because she was very busy and I was bothering her. So I will always remember her fondly.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And there's that. You know, I do think of fondly is Dave from Hoffman Estates. Hey, Dave, how are you doing?
Hey, Patty. Hey, Steve, the guest.
Hello.
Hey. And I can't wait till I get done. I'll throw it back on my iPad.
Oh. I've been listening. Hi, everybody.
My little transistor radio. So, I got to thinking earlier this morning about, like, after the election, about this Kerry Lake in Arizona.
Yeah.
On the flip side of the coin in Michigan. And the third place finisher, Ryan Kelly, who only got 15% of the vote to the Republicans' gubernatorial winner, Tudor Dixon, 40% of the vote. But this Kelly wants a publicly supervised hand recount, to an air quote here, to uphold election integrity.
Yeah.
This coming from a guy who's facing four federal misdemeanor charges for his involvement of trying to overturn the election results on January 6th. Can you say chutzpah?
Yeah, how about that? Yeah.
And back to Kerry Lake, as they are still counting the votes now, and she just comes out and declares herself the winner. These two are seemingly a product of, you know, when everyone got participation by trophies or medals, and as they didn't want no one to feel as a loser and equal in value to the winners. I mean, and from the better, be careful of what you wish for. This attitude or way of thinking came from a sense of entitlement with these people.
Absolutely.
Well, like we saw with Jim Oberweis 2 years ago, you can declare all you want, but until it's certified, it doesn't matter.
Don't get on the plane.
So they can say whatever they want, and you can take tours of the Capitol, and you can bring ice cream to the Republican leadership, and you're still not a congressman. So,
correct.
And like they say, there's two sides to a coin or two sides to any piece of bread. I mean, somebody's got to be a loser. You know, and they don't seem to want to be, you know, they got this from this orange monster.
Yep.
100%.
But has he now carried this thing for about 3 years that, you know, he was cheated and all of this? And the way he's doing it, that, you know, heads I win, you know, I win type of thing that, you know, he doesn't lose. He can't stand it. I can't believe you got people that actually are stupid enough to follow this sense of thinking.
It's two things. You know? It's a lack of, you know, of critical thinking, and it's also a deep hatred of Democrats, of liberals, of thinking that we're all commies or something. I mean, I think it's a combination, don't you?
In a way, but you know, a little bit, we may be at fault there, too, our leaders. You know, they kind of let them get away with it.
Absolutely right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah.
I am so sick of progressives and Democrats giving cover to progressives and Democrats who act like the 40 years of behavior we've seen from the right. If you're, you know, jumping out of bushes and stalking people and harassing people and acting the way these people have acted for 40 years, don't pat yourself on the back and tell me you're one of mine, because you're not.
Right. And my thought was, you know, we've got some of these people that have been there long in the tooth and that, and they figure I come from a blue state. It don't matter. I'm going to win anyway. Type of thing.
Right.
You
know, that's how AOC won.
And that's unfortunately been the attitude for too long in Illinois in a lot of ways.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Because, exactly. You know, because it's been easy to win and keep Democratic control, especially people of color and the labor unions have been taken for granted. And it bothers me that the unions haven't pushed back more in the post-Madigan days. And I'm seeing more pushback from communities of color, which is great. But, you know, another conversation you and I had recently, Patty, as somebody who spent probably 70% of my life living in majority-minority neighborhoods, I'm always amazed by people who choose to self-segregate, who live in some of the most segregated zip codes in the city, but who are so cavalier and so ready to harass people of color and women and tell them how they should feel about liberal and progressive issues. Well, you know, when you're living in something that's basically a suburb except for the zip code, you don't get to tell people in Lawndale and in Austin and in these other neighborhoods how they should feel about how they're policed. These people are scared to go into those neighborhoods.
Completely.
But from the safety of the Northwest Side, they've got no problem telling people of color how they should think and how they should vote. Mm-hmm. And that should disturb all of us.
I feel that so deeply.
Hey,
yes, Rosa. Yes, Dave.
One more for you guys, and then so you can get to others. How about that that Alex Jones's lawyer accidentally sending those texts?
I am very disappointed in what the jury has awarded. Do you see what the jury awarded?
I haven't seen.
I didn't see that, but the thing I liked about it, that I'm getting a senior moment here. Perhaps one of you all can help me on this one. But that lawyer, I like the guy too, but I just getting his name. The one, he's on Stephanie Miller, and then he's on MSNBC.
Yeah, that case is incredible. And actually, a quick shout out for listeners. If you are not familiar with the podcast Knowledge Fight, look it up. It is a great 2 to 3 times a week covering of all of the craziness that is Alex Jones, and two local Chicago comics or former comics host it, and it's definitely worth a listen.
What were we saying, Dave?
I was going to say, anyway, this lawyer, like I said, I'm getting a senior moment on his name. He was paired up with Joyce Vance last night. They were talking about that Jones's lawyer accidentally, you know, sending those texts out. And he said, "I tell you what, if I were the 1-6 committee and the DOJ, I'd be asking for those right away." And I guess that's what they are today. And my thought was, because they said it goes back 2 to 3 years, these texts of all kinds of stuff, and that's why he figured that the 1-6 and DOJ will be quite interested in, you know, because hey, we got some texts that weren't wiped clean on January 5th or January 6th.
Yeah, that's so true.
Accidentally or coincidentally wiped clean.
Yeah, it's hard to believe all that crazy and not be dumb enough to accidentally send texts. It sort of doesn't.
Yeah. I don't see why these people ain't doing some kind of jail time.
Exactly. Well, yeah, well, hey. Anyway,
let some other people get in and put in their opinions and their stories.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much, Dave. Have a great evening.
Great to hear you from the studio. Be well, guys.
Thank you. You too. Let's take a break here, continue our conversation. And yes, we are live streaming today, so you can check in with us on Facebook. And don't forget to join the WCPT 820 Club on Heartland Signal. And it's so good to see Lady B and, of course, my friends Tom Carmick, political strategist, and Jerry Walsky. Also, I'm putting you in political strategist. I think that you did enough groundwork.
Door knocking, and also
our beer Sherpa for Monaco Brewery. We'll talk a little bit later about
which is a much better title than political strategist. I'd go with beer Sherpa.
Yeah. The ladies are more impressed with that.
Oh, absolutely.
We'll talk about some of the places where you can pick up Monaco Brewery in the progressive brew in the Chicagoland area. More on Driving It Home with me, Patty Vasquez, in a moment on Heartland Signal. Where are the buttons again? This is here it is.
Wait, your side.
What is that?
Putin, stop these attacks immediately.
The ban on Russian oil imports.
Ban that will come from Russia. Yeah.
News that happens next will happen on WCPT 820.
Because facts matter. You're listening to WCPT 820.
Hi, this is Kirk Bankstead from the Minocqua Brewing Company, and I sell progressive beer like AOC IPA and Bernie Brew, a lovingly irascible democratic socialist lager. A percentage of the proceeds of every beer I sell goes to helping keep Wisconsin blue and driving the Trump cult out of our state. Enjoy a great craft beer and help your dysfunctional neighbor to the north get its democracy back.
Buy yours at Beer on Central in Evanston, D&D Finer Foods in Evanston, Rogers Park Provisions, Provisions Uptown, and Beer Shop Oak Park. Must be 21. Please drink responsibly.
You want facts to matter? Want to hear some truth? Get your lazy ass down to the voting booth and vote, goddammit! Vote, goddammit!
Want some justice on the Supreme Court?
Lifetime appointments, they ain't short.
Want women to control their own body?
Y'all are making Steve Goody swear a lot. We are probably not going to be able to check in with Steve Goody, who is in Edinburgh for the Fringe Festival. I'm going to see if we can figure it out tomorrow, because Lady B's like, if you can download it onto Adobe. I'm like, I don't know how to do any of that stuff. I mean, you can see.
I'm trying to find buttons.
Exactly. I'm barely pushing the right buttons as we're going right now. So we will try to figure that out for tomorrow. I'll message him and see. But broadcasting from Edinburgh will be the virtual live comedy show tonight at 8 p.m. Central. So that will be Brad Lee Tassel and Steve Goody and myself and special guests. And they'll be checking in from Edinburgh. So I'm excited about that. And we do have to figure out a way to invite some people to our... Well, here, let me just tell you first about the Whiskey Acres on August 17th. We will be at Whiskey Acres with Steve Goody and Bridget McGuire. So Steve's going to be playing all the great songs on his albums. And I don't know if he'll do a lot of his political ones there as much, but he's got a lot of... He's been a number one performer on Dr. Demento. So go to SteveGoody.com for all the great music that he does. And again, that will be at Whiskey Acres. The show will be starting at 7:30, maybe at 7. I'll get you more of that information. But put August 17th on the calendar.
I'm going to try to get out there.
It's my birthday.
Plus, you, I know, it's my birthday, so then you got to celebrate. Then you have Tata's the next day, don't you?
We have Tata's the next day. We are pausing momentarily for Tata's shows, the Tata's Kitchen and Social shows. We're pausing briefly while she secures a permit to make sure that we can proceed and have a lot more live entertainment. We're expanding. We may have an announcement about how often we'll be doing those shows, which might include, I don't know, every Thursday, which I'm super excited about. I know.
Excellent.
Comedy coming at you.
If you haven't seen Patty, folks, get out and see Patty.
Oh, my Lord.
And Steve Goody is excellent as well.
Oh, he's so good.
So this, you two have both actually performed, so this is a layman's observation, but somebody who's watched comedy for decades. Yeah, I think it's easier to be bad doing music or prop than probably anything else.
I don't know about prop, because prop can be, I think, is you have to be so over the top to sell a prop act that there's probably a discomfort level that obviously Carrot Top has mastered. I don't know that he ever was uncomfortable. But right. Musicians, I would say, because of the effort, because props can be corny or or something
and
can go wrong.
Props, you get an instant reaction, whereas the music, you got to play through, and then you get the reaction.
And he is so good. That he is so good. The last time he was in town, I had a chance to see him perform and talk to him for a little while. And in addition to just being a really nice guy, he's really good.
Oh, he's super talented.
I mean, he's on stage. I mean, I've known him when I was living in Nashville. That was like 20-something years ago. That's when I first met him. And he's been solid working ever since. And in that world, too. I mean, so he's among some great musicians and everything like that. So he's got to keep his game, even though he's doing the wacky stuff. I mean, he's still got some great people he can hang out with. And he's a musician at heart, too. You know what I mean?
So, an incredibly talented musician.
Yeah. And all the stuff he does in studio, I mean, he really knows his stuff. He's learned. He's amazing. Yeah.
He's one of those guys where he gets something stuck in his craw that he's got to perfect it until it's exactly the way he wants it, the way he imagines it. I love that. Yeah. And I didn't mean to leave Richard Chu, co-host of Family Meeting, on hold for so long, Richard. The conversation got away from us. But hey, how's it going?
Hey, it's going great. I'm heading up to Milwaukee to be in a golf outing, and I was listening to you three great folks talk, and wanted to chime in on what you were talking about earlier with regard to our some of our Democratic leaders here in Illinois not working as a team and not having a team effort in play. And that's, unfortunately, that's one of the challenges that we are experiencing throughout the country in some of the Democratic strongholds. And we really have to encourage our Democratic leaders or heads of state that are Democratic state chairpersons, and even Jamie Harrison, who's the DNC chair, to really work a little bit better, more effectively at making sure that we've got a team, we've got a bench, we're recruiting and bringing in new younger voices of talent, because I do worry about that. I mean, you guys spoke to it earlier, and I'm not sure what the final solution is, but I know that we really need to encourage those folks to do a better job of presenting a team concept so that we don't get beaten by or we don't cannibalize within because of the frustrations within the party. What do you guys think?
Could not agree more.
Totally.
And I think that is, you know, the bottom line is, once somebody acquires power, it's hard to give up. And it's especially hard to give up in a state where you're just, you know, dunking on the opposition all the time. So, you know, if
right.
you have my...
They're not really doing the work.
Exactly.
They're not really doing the work of leading. They're just dumping on the other party because they're not going to get a primary challenger. Not that they're not going to get one, but they're so entrenched. And if we have a blind side in our party, is that we have leaned on, rested on our laurels, frankly, of not bringing, in Illinois, Chicago specifically, is known for this. We've got to wait. The next great person that could be a great leader is turned off because they're in queue behind four other people, and you got to wait your turn. And that's crazy.
Oh, absolutely. And I cannot tell you how many times I've had people come to me and say they're thinking about running, or they'd like to run, or they'd like to get involved. But when they've tried to say something that's differed from the party line mm-hmm. with their local elected officials, they've been so marginalized, they've been treated so poorly mm-hmm. that they don't want to get involved. And they see the toxicity of campaigns and they don't want to get involved.
And that's exactly my point about the fact that I challenged an incumbent. You know, I was told to wait my turn for an incumbent that had been appointed by insiders and backroom deals. And I'm like, how? You know, and Robert Martwick told me that if Lindsay LaPointe got the appointment, that she would be a disaster of a legislator. That's what he told me before the deal was made. And I'm like, well, why would I sit back and go, oh, yeah, whatever, go ahead and make these choices just because you want to be the senator? How? That makes no sense.
Yeah.
It's insane. I'm right there with you guys. Eric and I talk about this often, and we really talked about it. We've talked about it the last couple of weeks on the family meeting, mainly because it's starting to cause... Well, the question we ask is that one of the reasons that the perception that younger voters are not involved or engaged is because they've got great ideas, they've got the energy, but they're being told to wait their turn, and they're sitting back going, well, y'all aren't getting the damn thing done. Why do I want to keep waiting my turn?
Yes.
You should check out the young man in New York. He's 38 years old, and I apologize. His last name is Patel, and he was in the debate this week with Jerry Nadler and Mahoney, I think is her name. And he basically said, you all need to stop telling young voters that Joe Biden is too old. That's not what they were saying. He called them out for not supporting Joe Biden openly if he runs again. And then when he called them out for that, and again, I'm kind of paraphrasing so you guys can kind of look this up, but he basically said, I'm running, I'm 38 years old, and I'm telling you that young voters are tired of seeing the older elected officials tell us to wait and chew. Meanwhile, you keep saying that we need more younger voters.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not letting the younger folks who want to run get in the game. And he called them out for saying, meanwhile, neither of you, until you got called on it, openly said you were going to support President Biden because you were worried that too many people were saying that he was old. And it was really interesting how he really threaded the needle. And you had to listen and think about, wow, what he just said was basically stop telling us to wait, and also stop telling us that we're not interested in Joe Biden because he's old. It was masterful.
Right. And a big part of the problem too is making it just about age and not about ideas.
Yes.
The bottom line is there are people who are younger than me who are entrenched, who have that opinion. And then there are people my age who say, you know, this is BS. We need to bring in people with new ideas. Unfortunately, it's more about power than age. It's more about once you get in, you're not willing to give anything up. And it's about an intractability that says, I'm in a safe seat in a safe state. So everybody else, you're kind of on your own. I'm worried about myself first and foremost. And you see that in a lot of these decisions that get made because they're safe. I mean, you know, there were but two or three challenges to incumbents in the General Assembly this year that weren't just nominal challenges. You know, there were two, or I would say, Patty, right? Two or three that were maybe serious challenges statewide.
Yeah.
And I don't think, and that should be disturbing. That's not good for the health of the party. Yeah. That's not good for the health of the state.
Exactly. This is a good conversation.
Well, listen, guys,
I want to get together with you when you get back in town.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, Lady B has my cell phone number. Get it from her.
I'm waving to her right now. I will get it from her.
Excellent.
Get my cell phone and email from her, and then let's look up. I'll be back. I'll be back tomorrow. I wanted to get up here tonight, right? And, you know, and get early stuff to do in the morning. You don't want to do it first drive this long. But why don't you reach out, get it from her, and then reach out to me, and then let's get together next week, one way or the other.
Sounds great.
Sort of start putting. Okay?
Yeah.
Excellent.
All right. Hey, Patty, big hugs to you, girl. Keep on doing what you do.
Thank you so much. And that's Richard Chu, co-host of Family Meeting. When can people listen to the Family Meeting, Richard?
Sunday from 4 to 6 p.m. on Chicago's Progressive Talk.
Right here.
AM 820.
Outstanding. And you can watch live stream on WCPT's Facebook page. Be safe, all right? Take care. We'll talk to you.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. What a great conversation. Let's take a break here and continue the conversation. We've got Roosevelt, George, and Jim on hold. We'll get to your calls when we come back. On WCPT 820, Heartland Signal. It is so good to be back in studio. Look, I can push buttons and everything. Watch this. Boom.
WCPT 820, Chicago's progressive talk, where facts matter.
I don't like the bad words in this song. They're blasphemous. I can't sing along.
Well, here's a version just for you. Sing with me, just like Jesus would do. Darn it.
In case you did not appreciate the language of Steve Goody's vote, gosh darn it, that's your PG version of it.
His neighbor's in Nashville, and when he's recording, they got to be a little upset. That's why he has to have a good, clean version or be very apologetic.
Well, that was something I learned the first time I performed in Nashville was they told me not to use that word, not to say GD.
Yeah,
so
no,
I was just like, what?
Yeah.
What?
So, how long ago was that? Because I think that's changed.
That would have been like the
90s?
The early 2000s, I would say.
Yeah,
probably
that's changed a lot. It's now the bachelorette party capital of the country.
Don't even get me started. Don't give me flashbacks.
And my good friend who lives out there sent me pictures from her adventure at a couple of drag shows this weekend, which is a big thing out there in Nashville now. So I think Nashville has moved into the 21st century. Finally,
yeah, but
sure.
But people who live
I'm sure there are pockets.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking that's downtown. That's the second
right.
Broadway. That's I know exactly.
No, you go to the surrounding suburbs. Yeah. And you're absolutely right.
I mean, there's a church on every corner.
Yep.
I mean,
exactly. Let's take Roosevelt's call. He's been on hold for a bit. Roosevelt, great to hear from you. What's on your mind?
Hello, everybody. How are you guys doing today? Thank you for taking my call, Patty.
Of course.
What's on my mind is the subject of lies and lying, the art of lying.
Yes.
Perfect example. So Ted Cruz answered John Stewart saying that the Democrats had changed the PACT Act and added a lot of pork, to be precise, $400 billion or $1 million of pork. And John Stewart answered back and said, no, he's lying. So Ted Cruz lied because he voted for it and the PACT Act, as John Stewart said, as it was on June 14th, which is what John Stewart said. So there's no, that's why we're in the pickle we're in right now, because there's no consequences for people that
yes.
lie.
Yep, I agree.
So then here's another example. You got this guy, Jones. And by the way, I encourage everybody to look it up on YouTube. I saw it yesterday. This idiot that said that the shooting wasn't real. You know, those kids were actors, and the people were threatened, had gotten threatened. After going through all the grief of their young kids dying, So there's another example.
Well, and let's talk about people who, you know, have been past heroes of some of these same types of progressives that I talk about. Two of the most disgusting people in this Alex Jones issue, with the fact that there's this new documentary about Jones out that is a complete whitewash of how disgusting his career is. Two of the big cheerleaders for it are Matt Taibbi and Glenn Greenwald, who actually hosted a Q&A with Alex Jones last week trying to rehabilitate his image.
Oh, God.
And, you know, these guys were grifters from the beginning, and unfortunately, a lot of people didn't see it and treated them as though they were legitimate journalists or legitimate progressives, and they were they never were. They were grifters, and they found a new grift. And Jones falls into that category, and people who enabled that type of behavior, you know what? I don't care if our end goals are the same. I don't care if your ends are the same as mine, if your means are corrupt and, you know, self-aggrandizing and grifterism and all this other BS. I'm going to call you out. And until we do that more, we have a problem. And yes, you know, and the last time I was on, I had somebody call me and say, oh, but it's worse on the right. And yeah, it is, because they've had 40 years of it since Reagan. Mm-hmm. They are good at it. They're more practiced at it. But if you don't think it's not a cancer on our party, you're wrong. And we need to do something about it. Just because one is a late stage melanoma and the other is an early stage carcinoma, it's still a malignant growth. And until we cut it out, we are no better than them. And I'm sick and tired of having to explain that to people who should know better.
Yeah. You know, to add on to what I said before, you know, they're copying the blueprint that Trump left them.
Yep.
And I'll give you one example on that. I understand there's a candidate. I cannot remember him or her name. But she, I think it's a woman. She said that if she loses, it's because the Democrats cheated. But if she wins, everything's okay.
Is that Arizona?
That could be a dozen of them at this point. That's kind of a mantra.
Pick one, yeah. Why not go with that? Because it's
and that
available.
goes back to Citizen Kane, mm-hmm. when he ran for governor, and they pull out the two newspapers, and the first one, Kane's elected governor, and the second one's fraud at polls.
Mm-hmm.
I mean that's not a new thing. It's just in our social media world that we live in, it is just something that we're pounded with every single day. And the other part of that is that, you know, 20, 30 years ago, the nuts had to actually seek each other out. Mm-hmm. If you lived in a town and you believed the nonsense that Alex Jones believed in the 70s, you had maybe some old mimeograph John Birch Society things. You found the other crazy person in town. Now you can find the crazies in 2 minutes and two clicks. And so these things become so much more powerful because it's so easy to develop a group of like-minded idiots. And that is a danger.
Go ahead.
I have a question for you. Do you think, do you think that's a good strategy to follow up on what Trump said, meaning that if I lose, you know, it's because the Democrats cheated? In a general election, do you think that's going to work as a strategy, election in that woman's election in Arizona?
Well,
I don't think.
Well, here's the thing, though. How it works can be a variety of different things. And one of the things that we've, you know, talked about is the through line through all of this is money. And when you're trying to build a cause and raise money and get people energized, you get them energized with whatever message works. And for a large portion of that, you know, whatever percentage of the Republican Party that is who believes, you know, that every election they lose is stolen, bottom line is those people write checks and they get energized. So it might not be a winning strategy for winning that election, but it's a winning strategy for two or three other things that get checked off in terms of what they're trying to accomplish. So you have to look at the bigger picture of what they're trying to do with it.
Thank you so much for calling, Roosevelt. I put you on hold because I want to make sure I get to George as well before we end the show, and I'm going to apologize to Jim and whoever else is calling in because we have to wrap up, and I have one thing I want to say before we go because I'm wearing a new baseball hat. So you'll have to go to WCPT Facebook Live page to see what that is. George on the South Side. Thank you, Roosevelt. Hi, George. What's on your mind, my friend?
Well, I'll make this as quick as I can. I hope your son is doing well.
Thank you.
And I am a lifelong blue-collar union guy. Both sides of my family back to the time of immigration around 1912, same thing. And the Democratic Party has not nationally been as strong an advocate for unions and working people as it should have. That's why jerks like Reagan and W. Bush and Trump can get so many working class people to vote for him. I'm old enough to remember when it was a regular talking point of the Democratic Party to repeal the Taft-Hartley Act, or at least Section 14B, which allows right to work for less states. And we still don't have card check passed. I mean, Illinois is not as bad as the rest of the country. This is a solid blue state with the Democratic Party and the union working together. But
for now, but we've had plenty of time to pass card check, and the fact that card check hasn't passed in the last decade should be troubling to everyone who cares about unions.
Yeah, it is, and that includes me. And Tom Hartman this morning was talking to the head of the Engineers Union. They have been in talks for 2.5 years with Burlington Northern Santa Fe, and they still don't have a contract. I mean,
unbelievable.
This kind of thing is allowed. Working people say, you know, like, what good is the Democratic Party to me?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're right. And I know that you're what you want to talk about was Democrats standing up to Republicans, and we need to keep on that. Thank you so much for calling, George, and we'll continue the conversation.
Couldn't agree more, George.
Well, thank you so much.
Can I do a quick hat shout out as long as we're talking about hats?
Quick hat, yeah.
I'm wearing my Kansas City Monarchs hat in honor of my late friend, Buck O'Neill, who just finally was elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame, finally inducted last week, and was one of the forces behind the establishment of the Great Negro League Museum in Kansas City, where I met him several times over the years. And everyone, if you go to Kansas City, go there.
And I'm telling everyone to go visit Uprising Bakery and Cafe, their Facebook page, their website, or their actual cafe. They have been they've reached a deal with the Village of Lake in the Hills. If you don't know about Uprising Bakery and Cafe, they were vandalized because they were going to have an event that featured drag queens and book readings and things like that. So they are going back to having live events. So congratulations to Uprising Bakery and Cafe and their collaboration with the ACLU of Illinois. So congratulations, and we will hope to learn more. Thank you, Jim and George and Roosevelt and Dave and Richard and everyone who called in today and all your texts. And thank you all for your kind words. I got to go. I'm super late. Mike Creutz up next. Devil's Advocate. Thank you, Lady B. Bye, everyone.